This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hi there. I'm here with Dr. Jen Gupta and Dr. Mark Perber. I have my interview questions written on my arm. But the first question, it appears I must ask you, is what did you have for breakfast this morning?
I've said this quite a few times already today.
You're
making me relive it. A cross bun because my brother-in-law was not paying attention to my breakfast.
Toasted cheese sandwich for me.
Well, that sounds really tasty.
It's pretty good, yeah.
Much better.
Can everyone at the back here, by the way, is that? Yeah? Okay, good.
Excellent. Okay, let's get on with it then. So Jen and Mark, you both left Manchester and gone on to kind of exciting things. So do you want to tell us what you're up to now? Maybe Mark will start with you.
Okay, yeah, well, I'm living in London now, and I've moved on, not entirely from astronomy, I'd like to think, but I'm now working on statistics for the government, for the Ministry of Justice, and it's all about reoffending rates amongst criminals. You might think it's slightly different, but I used to work on pulsars. So we have.
Well, they also redo things, pulsars, don't they?
Essentially, you've got populations of pulsars, and you've got populations of people. And some of the pulsars were better behaved than others.
Okay.
And let's say some of the people are better behaved than others as well.
Right.
And I used to like the best behaved pulsars, but now we're looking at some of the less well behaved people.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think it's possible that a lot of people don't realise how many astronomers end up going into data science. I mean, it's really a job that a lot of us end up doing, because even though it might seem like a different job, a lot of the skills kind of overlap.
Definitely, yeah, they do. Sometimes people say, well, what... I hope no one in the audience does, but sometimes people say, what is the point in astronomy? Which is a sensitive question, because in some ways it feels a bit of a luxury to do it. But actually, I think one of the things is that people who are trained through astronomy are often seeded into other analytical sort of jobs and then end up doing different things. But maybe if I hadn't had astronomy as a sort of carrot, I would never have got into, you know, research in general.
So do you find working for the government much different to working in academia?
It is a bit different, yeah. it's good. There is a sort of difference in the environment, because people tend to come in around 9 and they tend to go home around 5.
Oh, wow, what's that like?
Strangely, the office is mostly a place of work. And in academia, you'll find there's not a particularly clear delineation between people who are working, people who are living other rest
of
their lives.
I do know some people who have literally lived in the office.
Yeah. Well, if you were going to ask what was one of my favourite Jodcast memories, I once went into the Jodcast studio where, as it was explained, there's a lot of audio damping things, which is things like duvets and carpets and stuff. And I went in and I saw a pair of feet, and someone was asleep on the table with a duvet on top of them. So that doesn't really happen in my job.
In the government.
No, not really.
I'm glad to hear it. So Jen is now working at the University of Portsmouth, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. But I'm not working in research, I'm the outreach officer for the department.
Okay.
So I coordinate all the school's outreach, all the public engagement, try to encourage all of our researchers. A lot of people don't realise that we do cosmology in Portsmouth. But it's the Institute of Cosmology and Gravitation. There's about 65 of us from PhD students upwards. And, yeah, trying to encourage all of them to go out and share what they're doing with the wider world.
Wow, that sounds like a really rewarding job.
It's quite nice. And, again, I'm in a bit of a weird position where I think I'm the only person in my department who does kind of stick to the sort of 9 to 5, unless I'm out with the inflatable planetarium, in which case I stick to the sort of 7 in the morning to about 3 in the afternoon.
Oh, I used to have to use one of those. They're fun, aren't they?
So much fun.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Kind of gets smelly after a while, though.
Yeah. Deciding to focus on secondary schools with the Astrodome may not have been my most sensible moment in Portsmouth. But it's so rewarding. There's been more than one occasion where we've taken the inflatable planetarium into a school, and there's been a child who's been a little bit disruptive but obviously really into it, so they've been like answering all the questions but being quite loud. And then one time I remember one of them like came up and they like thanked me like on at the end, and I was like, even if that was sarcastic, thank you. And then he was like, no, that was sincere. And then he left, and the teacher said that boy was actually normally taught in isolation because he's so disruptive in class. And yet he sat through the Astrodome show, he got really into it. And so those kind of things are just so rewarding, and is why, you know, I love my job.
That's wonderful. That's fantastic. And can you tell us a little bit about what you do in your spare time?
Yeah, in my spare time, I work in the planetarium at Winchester Science Centre. They have a monthly singles night, which is a fantastic evening to work at. I go and do a live planetarium show there once a month. And then in my spare time, I help to run the Winchester Science Festival. So my boss at Portsmouth keeps on telling me that I need some new hobbies. So I bought a dog, that kind of helps. Yeah.
He bought a dog.
Yeah.
He can help you with your astronomy.
He's got a starry collar.
Oh.
He was looking at the moon the other morning.
What's his name?
His name's Ralphie.
Oh, that's nice.
He's very cute.
So back to you, Mark. We were talking about this a little bit before I came on, and what Mark is doing is actually quite interesting. So would you mind telling us a little bit more about, even though it's not astronomy,
Yes.
Would
yeah.
you mind telling?
Are you allowed to?
Well, that's it. That's if you're allowed. I mean, in my head, Mark is some kind of 007
yeah.
type person who works for the government and can't tell us a single thing that he does.
It's not that secretive, though. It's not MI5, though.
Okay. Are you sure?
Well, I couldn't tell
you. Wouldn't tell us.
You
wouldn't tell us what it was.
Totally. It's. I feel like it's. Yeah, you know, it's a bit different to astronomy, even though it's not a million miles away. Yeah. But essentially, what we're looking at is not just reoffending rates in general, but are reoffending rates going down as a result of people who've committed offences receiving some kind of treatment or some kind of intervention to help them to hopefully change their behaviour.
Okay, so in terms of like data, so you look at a bunch of reoffenders and you look at kind of things that have happened, and then presumably you take your graphs and show them to David Cameron and and David Cameron says, oh yes, very good, Mark. Yeah. Is that what happens?
That's not quite what happens, but there's a lot of people out there who are working with offenders and trying to, you know, to get them to change. And I guess sort of what I've found out about as statisticians trying to analyse them, and moving from astronomy, which is pretty complicated,
yeah.
is that people can be maybe the most complicated things in the entire universe.
I should think so.
Everybody here is the end product of about 3 billion years of evolution or something, and it makes them pretty complicated.
So it's probably pretty hard to fit a linear regression to that.
That's exactly what we do try to do, though. So, essentially, you have to compare one group of people to another group of people.
Okay.
And so we're comparing the behaviour of people who've received a certain treatment with the behaviour of a control group, which is a bunch of people who've not received that treatment. And because you never get a random trial, you never get to take a bunch of people and put them in one group or the other, we try and match them together from what we've already got.
Okay.
So we'll say, okay, here's a person who received this treatment. What was their age? How many previous offences, what type of previous offences, do they have any particular problems that we know of, and we try and match that with a similar person in the control group, and then we just look at the reoffending rates over a year between the treatments and control groups.
Wow.
And hopefully for the people who are conducting the treatments, they'll find the reoffending rates among the treatment group is lower than among
that's
the control group.
Defined. So it's really very scientific.
It is scientific.
Cool.
Sometimes
you are a scientist, I guess. So.
Sometimes you get the result they're looking for, sometimes not, but we have
like astronomy.
we have to tell them straight anyway.
Yeah. Cool.
Happened.
Okay. So back to you, Jen. So I was reading Jen's blog in preparation for this interview. She's done a lot of really, really impressive stuff, including being commended for an Asian Women of Achievement Award.
Yeah, that was a really weird experience.
Really?
So, highly commended in the Young Achievers category at the Asian Women of Achievement Awards last year. But it was just, so my boss put me forward. It's a scheme run by the same person who runs the Women of the Future Awards. My boss, Dr. Karen Masters, won the science category in the Women of the Future in a previous year, so she put me forward for this. I then had to go to an interview. I was shortlisted, went to an interview with it was someone who was very high up in sort of human resources in Shell, and the person who's in charge of the London Stock Exchange.
Okay.
And one of the Queen's secretaries was meant to also be on the judging panel, but I guess the Queen had an emergency
Queen
that day.
Secretaries?
Because, so they weren't there, and then they sort of like quizzed me about what I did and all that kind of stuff. And then we went all along to this award ceremony. I took my mum. Cool. We got all dressed up in the traditional outfits of my mum's tribe in India.
Oh, wow.
We got all like glammed up and went along to this awards. Didn't win, but it was, just a very surreal experience.
Okay.
But really, really good. Like, yeah. It was really nice to be put out of my comfort zone, but definitely out of my comfort
zone. Because your comfort zone, I believe, is more science comedy.
Yeah, this is something that Mark and I have both done, and I actually got into it because one of Mark's friends runs, or does he still run? Still runs Manchester Bright Club.
Yeah.
So Bright Club is a series of events where researchers are turned into comedians. And so I did that in Manchester, basically, because I think I was in the car with Mark and Rick after one of these, and they were like, you're going to do this. So I did it. So it's all thanks to Mark. But I've done a number of them. Went to London to do a big Bright Club, went up to the Edinburgh Fringe, and then this year it seems that I've done quite a few ones. So I did a really fun event earlier this year in London called the Festival of Bad Ad Hoc Hypotheses.
That's a bit of a
where where people it's basically like a fake conference, and you have to come up with a stupid sort of hypothesis that's completely ridiculous, but you have to present it in a scientific way. And I was invited along to be the keynote speaker, so I came up with a few different ways that we could fix the world's problems with big data. So for example, I decided that to counteract global warming, all we need to do is move the Earth further away from the Sun. So just capture an asteroid,
move
this away. We could solve the energy crisis by just building... I was inspired by Ralphie for this one, building giant hamster wheels, but for dogs and children, and then we can hook them up to turbines. Because I've also got a five-year-old nephew, and watching my dog and my nephew together is just exhausting watching them. So I thought we might as well harness that energy.
I feel like that would actually work.
Yeah. And in the process, I discovered that someone has made a human-sized hamster wheel. So, you know...
I've been in a human-sized hamster wheel.
that's a lot of fun. I think I really like trying to sort of get science across in different ways. Engaging with audiences that maybe wouldn't come to a science talk, but they might come to a comedy night, and then bam, you hit them with some science.
Great.
I also did a really good one at the National Astronomy Meeting a couple of years ago. We had it in Portsmouth, and we put on a comedy night. And I was essentially Chris, and John Coleshaw came along and did a set, so I was essentially Chris's warm-up act, which I think is my proper place in the scheme.
Cool, well, let me consult my notes here.
There was a two-minute warning just then.
Oh, was there? Well, in that case, that's my cue to go to a special message from another Jodcast veteran who couldn't be with us here today because she's in Canada. So, George, could we bring up now the video from our very dear friend.
Hello, Jodcast Live. Greetings from Canada. I'm sorry I couldn't be there today, but sadly there's a rather large body of water between here and there, so this is the best I could do. I had a lot of fun doing the Jodcast over the years, and some of my favourite memories are when we were coming up with ideas to play around with the April Fool's Day episode. The machines taking over the Jodcast is still possibly my favourite episode to date. And also recording the pantomimes was just absolutely so much fun. You have no idea of the voices that people have and can come up with when recording a pantomime, which is absolutely fabulous. And I think my most bizarre Jodcast moment was probably during the NAMM 2012 episode, where we did a podcast a day, and my episode was on the same day as the conference dinner. And I cut the timing a little bit fine because it had to be recorded, edited, proof-listened and released before the conference dinner. And I ended up releasing it somewhere down Oxford Road from my phone. I'm probably not the only person to have done that over the years. So, yeah, that's a little bit about my time at the Jodcast. And thank you very much for letting me be part of Jodcast Live. Jod on.
So that talking head, everyone, was Dr. Christina Smith, and I'll remind you that I've been here with Dr. Mark Perber and Dr. Jen Gupta, and thank you very much for listening to our interview.